Meditation develops the quality of listening to the silence. And then sounds become a movement in that silence. Earlier, we are consumed by the sound. Someone drops something, someone's mobile phone goes off. And the attention goes to the sound. And we live our lives like this because consciousness is operating through the senses. But when we start recognizing that all sounds emerge from silence and dissolve into silence, there's a slight shift of attention. Like right now, your attention is on my words, but you can still hear the silence between the words, behind the words. And this starts happening during the day because the ears have opened up a bit. It is like you read a book. And you're consumed by the story, which is made up of alphabets which form words, and the words make sense because there are spaces between the words. So we have lost sight of the blank white page behind the words. Meditation reintroduces us to that blank space without which we couldn't read the words. But our attention was so consumed by the story, by the words, we forgot about the blank space. So, which is more important, the blank space or the words? Because for the words to be and for your eyes to interpret them, the blank space is necessary. But because consciousness is so subtle, so in the background, so secretive, we miss it. So, on the path of Gyan Yoga, the path of knowledge, this recognition that no matter what emotions I'm going through, what thoughts are coming, what events are happening, this silence, this blank space is on which all these events are happening, all these emotions are happening, all these thoughts are appearing. So one realizes more and more the importance of this, which has no form. And this that has no form is the true knowledge. Because without it, where is the rest of the knowledge? And when we start recognizing this, the dialogue in our mind starts changing. For example, if I'm in a very emotional state, the dialogue changes from I am in a very emotional state to emotions are arising. Earlier it is the me. And then I should not be so emotional. That is the next dialogue. The me is in fact now more and more fortified because it has taken ownership of the emotions and so gets more and more involved in the duration of time in suffering and compounds and perpetuates the suffering, getting lost in the story of me. And then it is futile because it realizes that it has created the problem by identifying with something and is now trying to dissolve the problem which it created. So it gets into a trap. The suffering increases more and more. But when it is seen in the light of clarity, in the silence, through that blank space, there's a sense of detachment with the emotion. And in that, this emotion starts burning. Because it is not getting any sustenance. There's nothing which is now keeping it up on a pedestal and doing its aarti, which we love to do. We love drama, we must admit it. That is why TV series on Netflix and all, which are on drama, do so well. Because not only are we addicted to drama, but we love someone else's drama. Because it gives us some relief from our drama. So life is very dramatic. Who wants to look at a blank screen? It's too boring, you see. And then why did reality shows become so popular? Because that was real drama. That is how it worked. Because now you got a sense of seeing something real. How people behave with each other under the same roof. How they act, how they react. So it became very entertaining. So drama feeds on drama. You see? So with meditation, with the yoga of knowledge, you have to be prepared that your life becomes less dramatic. Because that is the dawn of peace. And that is what you are looking for. True happiness, which is not dramatic. Because if it is dramatic, it comes and goes. Would anyone like to share anything or ask anything?
Yeah, so the thing is basically, Yeah, so the thing is basically, I have a,
I sometimes tend to hold grudges against people, especially there's this person, he's my first cousin only, but he has been like very toxic. Like when I was sick once, he's told me you're horrible, or when I was 8 years old, he told me you're a duffer. So I'm like thinking, and he has never shown any empathy towards me in anything. He has always just put me down. So I feel very drained out and weak. So now somewhere inside me, that is there that I want to take revenge, and I want to prove how I am better and he is not the best, like what everyone feels. And this is because he always shows others that he is very nice and stuff like that. So I'm having this kind of thing that how do I keep a relationship with him? Like, I don't want to, but I'm confused. How should I do that?
See, nobody guaranteed us that everyone has to behave properly with us. Did God give you that guarantee?
No.
In fact, you should be happy because seeing his behavior towards you, you'll appreciate the others who love you more. Life is polarity. There will be people in our life who will be nasty to us for no reason. Now, we cannot force people to love us. We cannot force people to be good to us. So what happens? As you said, one option is revenge, to get even with the person. But then how many people will you get even with in your life? If from a young age you want to get even with someone, imagine over the next 50 years how many people you will have to get even with. So firstly, to understand that this person is nasty to me because that is the way he is conditioned. Maybe he had parents who were nasty to him, siblings who were nasty, we don't know.
No, I know. Actually, his mom is, I mean, she is, his mom is a bit, she gets angry fast, but otherwise she's very nice. She has been very helpful to our family also. So somewhere my parents feel that maybe he's also trying to help, but they don't know that he's actually not helping. It's his mom who has been helping us always here. Yeah.
Fine. So anyway, he is playing out his script, his blueprint, which you have no control over. Only thing is you are the receiving end.
Correct.
Now, firstly, when you accept that this person is causing me hurt, no doubt, I am feeling pained by this person's behavior. I cannot deny it. Now we have to explore the revenge feeling. Revenge is because you hurt me, so I should hurt you, so you know how I feel. But when you accept that nobody is the doer of their actions, they are playing out their script, hurt will still arise, but this feeling of revenge will dissolve. Yet, you want to know what should I do in a situation like this, because you don't want to suffer this person's behavior. So what are your options? One, maybe speak to him, see if it works. If you've tried it, it doesn't work, that matter ends there. Two, I stay away from this person, yet I wish them well because they have this particular quality which God made. I may have some flaws which God made too. So I stay from away if I have the option from such a person, but I don't convince others that this person is evil. It's not my job. Of course, I'll tell my parents, my family that this is what he's saying. But rather than focusing on revenge, my focus shifts to what can I do in such a situation to safeguard myself. That is where my focus shifts. You see? Because the world is out there to trouble you. So these kind of people come as tests. And lessons have to be learned because if they are not, we will keep having to learn such lessons. So we absolve these people of doership, that we don't know what their destiny is. Somehow this relationship is meant to be a disturbed one. Thy will be done. But I don't have to force myself to accept it all the time. That's it. It is so simple. Because you see, this thought of revenge is happening in your own consciousness. So the suffering is yours. This feeling of revenge, hatred, malice, ill will is happening in one's own consciousness. So we are suffering. So such people, you have to let them go in your consciousness with a silent blessing. That is all. For your peace of mind. And you don't have to force yourself to be a good person, to continue being at the receiving end in case your elders tell you, no, he's a good boy. No need. Your gift becomes silence, acceptance that this relationship has turned out like this, though I didn't do anything, at least consciously, for this person to behave like this. And you leave these kind of people to their destiny. Because you are not here to teach the world a lesson. You are not here to tell evil people, nasty people, that they should not be nasty. Yes, you may express your feelings, but you express them once and let it go. Whether they listen or not is God's will. So you don't want to force your view on someone else. More importantly, now you know how this feels. You'll be very careful that you don't inflict such feelings on others, because you don't want to be at the receiving end of this. These are how the thoughts start changing.
Yeah. So, and my second thing is, is a chanting allowed a better way, or chanting in your mind a better way of doing it?
What do you prefer?
I am not sure. Like, which would be better? I'm
no.
Confused.
What do you feel you enjoy more? You prefer chanting loudly or internally?
Depends. If I'm at home, maybe loudly. If I'm outside, internally.
So whatever you feel, you go with that. What do you chant?
Means Sambha Sadashiv.
Beautiful. In fact, when a negative thought comes, start chanting this.
Okay.
When this feeling of getting back at someone is arising, start chanting it. Why? I'll tell you. It's very simple. It's not rocket science. A mantra, mantra means mantra, liberating the mind. So when a particular negative thought gets fixated, you have to distract it. That is the job of the mantra. So the focus shifts to the mantra, freeing the mind. Anything which disturbs you, not just this person, let this chant happen because you're enjoying it. So enjoy it.
Okay, thank you.
You see? Let me just pass the mic there. Your mom hasn't come today? Oh.
Wanted to seek your guidance about something you know, deeply disturbing, which happened in the family a few days back. A young boy lost his life. He had gone to Goa with his friends. On his journey back, he booked a bus to Bombay. Midway, he started telling the driver that I want to go to Shirdi and not Bombay, and that the bus driver should let him off somewhere that he can then go to Shirdi. That was his wish. He pestered the driver apparently, and the driver let him off in a place called Pet Nakan, which is close to Kolhapur, at around 9:30 in the night. Post which, he was completely out of touch with us, with the family. And after 24 hours, they found his body about 2.5-3 kilometers away from the place he was let off. Fished out of a well, his luggage not to be seen, not to be found. He was with no clothes. And the police wants to pass this off as suicide.
The police?
Wants to pass this off as suicide. and are saying you just take the body back and cremate or do whatever, which eventually got done. However, somewhere the family obviously feels there is some wrongdoing and there has been no justice to him and there's no closure. So in a situation like this, what's your guidance?
So you are part of this family?
My wife's sister's family.
And how old was the boy?
34.
Single or married?
Single.
And he used to go to Shirdi earlier?
Very much. Very religious.
Was he depressed?
So, when we speak to the family, which we did over the last 3 days, they say he was not depressed, although he did not have a job. He was on the path of getting a job. So that was not a... And he enjoyed Goa, by the way. This was with his childhood friend that he had gone there. So mental health is a question which constantly comes in, you know, comes to your mind. And it would be sad that it was mental health that caused this issue. But all the circumstances around it, of he not being having any clothes on him, his luggage being missing, etc. His mobile phone, by the way, was found. And that's what led us to that area.
See, there are two things here. One is, no matter how horrific this sounds, to accept this as the destiny of the boy. That is the first thing. Because if we resist the destiny itself, it causes too much suffering. People have gone in various strange ways. Only God knows why he takes them in such ways. You see. First step is that. Now, second step is, if the family feels a grave injustice has been done and wants to get to the bottom of it, they have to ask themselves, do they have the resources? Do they have the aptitude? And is that what they feel like doing? See, they are the laws of man and they are the laws of God. But in this Maya, in this realm, we think only the laws of man operate. Now, this family is in pain. Now, they also know the backstory, which I don't know, perhaps you don't know completely. For example, you will not believe it. I know a case where a boy was alcoholic for 20 years until the parents found out. 20 years. Now, actually, if you go to a therapist and say this, the therapist will say it's quite impossible.
Unlikely.
Most likely the parents were in denial.
Yeah.
Right? So we don't want to get into the backstory because I don't know it, you don't know it very well either. Yeah. The situation is there has been a death which doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Now, if this family feels moved to go to the courts of law, investigate, see if there was wrongdoing, they have to go down that road. Nobody can tell them what to do. If they feel that that is not our cup of tea, even if an injustice is done, we are not built that way, nor do we have resources and the abilities. Then what happens? To accept the divine will and face the pain which they have to live with as part of the destiny, rather than get consumed by something which perhaps they innately are not drawn to in any case, which is going down this path of investigating, finding out what happened so that other people know, we know. It all depends on their aptitude, you see. So neither I nor anyone can tell them what they should do and what they should not do. The teaching of Advaita puts things before you and tells you these are the various options. Ultimately, you have to take a decision. No guide or spiritual guide would actually tell a person what to do unless it was necessary and that guide had a vision. But this family has been dealt unfortunate cards as far as this instance is concerned. But it is not the only family which has been dealt unfortunate cards. There's so much pain and suffering all over the world. For example, if you read, and I don't know what is real news and what is fake news about a school in Iran being bombed, a school of children, what would those parents say? Our child didn't do anything and this bomb landed on the school.
Absolutely.
So life is not fair. Life does not make sense. You see, we do not know how deep the rivers of karma flow because our view is limited. So when we stay objectively with the situation at hand and not get driven by our emotions, a sense of objectivity comes in. That is all that Advaita brings to it. It cannot take away one's pain, but it can take away the psychological suffering which is associated with the pain. You see? That is all. That is all, and that is everything.
Thank you.
And look at it this way. His final thought was of going to Shirdi, not to a bar. You see? Generally, when a child or an adult is infused with spiritual thoughts of sages' wisdom teachings, that grace takes care of them, even if their body has been dropped. So my suggestion is to them, feel the pain thoroughly because that is the human experience. Feel it thoroughly. That is part of the destiny. But ask yourself, where do I go from here? Which path do I have to follow? And whatever answer comes intuitively, spontaneously, go ahead. This is not to say that we have to not hold people accountable and so on and so forth. It all depends on what they feel like doing. For example, I have a friend, he's a landlord. He loves going to court. It comes naturally to him. It's not that he wants to inflict suffering on others. He enjoys going to court. And you see, this goes back long back. In school and college, he used to win all the debates. So it comes from there. Someone else like me, my legs would shake if I had to go to court. It depends on what our innate nature is. There was a property related case against us. I remember once I had to go to the court just to be there, not to say anything, and the other side said something which was a blatant lie. So I burst out saying this man is lying. So the judge looked at me and said like this, you won't believe it, the same judge started visiting the health club I would go to, and next thing I know I'm giving him books, Ramesh Balsekar's books, The Power of Now, and he loved reading all of that. Wonderful man. He was deeply spiritual, is deeply spiritual. So, you see, this is what it is. If there are people accountable, don't think that they can escape their divine destiny. Because this is the law of action and reaction. So simple. You have come here before? Well, what is your name?
Sachin.
Sachin. And you're from Bombay?
Yes.
Which part?
Kandil.
Kandil. So how do you get here?
We drive here.
You drive down?
Me, my wife, my friend.
Oh, you all come together?
Yeah.
So you don't benefit from the coastal road or metro or anything?
We do.
You do?
We come by the coastal road.
Acha.
Very nice to come here in the morning.
Sunday mornings.
We actually look forward to coming here.
Very easy to come.
It's always a pleasure. We look forward to coming here.
You actually explored and put all the things very beautifully, from the possibilities to the outcomes and what you can do about it.
Yes.
It's time for people to process.
See, that's why Advaita, no, is not for everyone. Because the simple tenets of Advaita, thy will be done, nobody is the doer of their actions, one reaches after jab bahut pitai hui hai. You see, when you've been hammered and bashed up, then you feel, ha, now, people like being beaten up. So they want to get into fights all the time, with others, with themselves, and with God. So that is why Nisargadatta Maharaj was not being arrogant when he said that these are the teachings of the last resort. He was not arrogant when he said he was the guru of the last resort. What he was saying was, you see, like Osho used to send people to bug Maharaj, you know, and he looked down upon Nisargadatta Maharaj. So once Maharaj told someone who came, who was from Osho, that look, first you go there, finish your jumping and dancing, then you come to me. So what he meant was, once you've tried things, done things, try to control your life, figure it all out, then you come. Then you're ready to listen to this teaching. That is what he meant. And if someone is drawn to it at a young age, what a blessing it is. Because it means that they will spend most of their life in peace and harmony, equanimity and calm. But this also happens when they have done lots in a previous incarnation. You see? So to be even drawn to this is such a big thing. And what do you do in life?
Currently, we manage two social enterprises. We have a school for mentally challenged children in the site. But close to about 140 children there.
Nice.
Whom we take care of. Here, second one is where we take care of street children. We have a school for street children. 50, 60. These are really bright children. And we are setting up a respite home for mentally challenged adults. This is in Varanda, where we want to accommodate for 40, 50 adults who need perpetual care.
And what has moved you to do all this? You have the mic with you?
No.
That's for the recording.
Honestly, it was just one gentleman, this one.
He was the culprit.
He was. So he keeps saying, you know, it's the Lord who chooses you to do whatever is needs to be done. As a professional, I was a chief financial officer for a multinational company.
So you retired from that?
I did a premature for the purpose and the cause. And it's giving me tremendous satisfaction in what I do.
Yes.
The last one that we intend to do in Lonavala is set up a senior citizen living area, because we've got a fairly large tract of land, which is what we never believed or dreamt that we would get a 5.5 acres in Lonavala.
You mean someone gifted it to you, or you
purchased
it? Somebody
who's very close gave it to us at a fairly significantly lower price.
That's wonderful. That means this is destined. Yeah. When these things happen, then you just have to flow with it.
Yeah. So we never thought we would get a 5.5 acres. So 1 acre is being used for the respite home. The balance would be used for the senior citizen living.
That is the secret of seva, you know. The thing is, it takes away the attention from the me. We are so focused on ourselves. Now the focus is on someone else. So that is the first benefit. So actually, we are being selfish. We are being selfish because it's for our own benefit that we are shifting the focus from ourselves. The other is that what we give is what we get. Again, we are being selfish,
yeah,
without knowing it. It appears that we are helping others, but we are only helping ourselves, because there is only one self. You see, that is the Maya. So that's beautiful. What work is happening through you.
Yes.
Not what work you are doing. That's what work is happening through you, and may it continue happening.
Yeah.
And perhaps one day we'll visit your center in
Lonavala. Please do. Please do. It'll be wonderful. And just for us, last thing, you know, when we started this journey, we had no clue how the resources will flow. And God has been so kind that every time we felt there is lack of resources, they just appear from somewhere.
Beautiful.
And I'll give you an example. I'll just take 1 minute more.
Yeah, yeah.
When we started the school for street children, we genuinely did not know where the money will come from, because we are, you know, giving them food and teaching and all of that. About 12 months back, out of nowhere, about $100,000 were transferred to our account. We tried figuring out who did this. There's a gentleman in Bangalore who transferred, who came to know about our school. So firstly, we said thank you, and, you know, profusely thanked him. He said, no, I'm going to do this every month.
Wonderful.
And he's been contributing every month since then. We don't know him, never seen him, never spoke to him. He says, my donation receipt, you send it to this number, it's my wife's number. You send it, nobody is going to care.
That's wonderful.
It's really nice to be here. There's so much peace to be here.
Yes. You know that there was I had invited Lawrence for a talk here. I don't know if you all were there. He said, your house is like a temple. It is true, because there has been sadhana happening in this house since 1995. So it is true. Sundar Iyer. It was the same with Ramana Maharshi, you know. He made his disciples sweat because they were building these big buildings and there was no money. But the money would come on the day they ran out of money. That was the real test for the disciples. Because they would really be sweating that what's going to happen now, and in the last instance the money would come. Amazing how it works. Yeah.
Adi Shankaracharya had let down three conditions for salvation. One was male body, another was Varna, Brahmins, and third I forgot. So could you elaborate about it?
I don't know much about this, but I think everything has to be seen in context of time, era, and social structures and social concepts. Because this male body business, I'm not too confident of.
Yeah, but that's what...
When we see sages like Lal Ded of Kashmir or Anand Mahima, etc., etc., there are enough examples where we have... in fact, as Anand Mahima herself said, when her husband asked her, who are you? And she said, Purna Brahma Narayan. You see, so it is simpler in a way because the male body, the male structure is less of an emotional body, in a way, you see. And a woman, especially at that time, had a significant role to play, which was very different from today in society. But I don't think this is, my view is it's not a 100% certainty.
Yeah, because Maharashtra itself has got many female saints, Zanabai, Muktabai,
exactly.
Sakhubai.
Saint Muktabai was the Adi Shakti.
Yeah.
And can you imagine her Shakti, because she had to balance her three brothers.
And Changdev also.
And Changdev's guru was a young girl. A 1,000-year-old yogi's guru is a young girl means. So we don't have to see these statements in an absolute sense.
Thank you.
I mean, after all, it is the mother, which is the creatrix of the universe, the divine mother. Without the mother, nothing will happen. Yes.
One quick. Yeah, my question is basically... you know, between Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, I feel personally Jnana Yoga is more difficult because it requires a lot of attention, awareness. While in Bhakti Yoga, we simply surrender ourselves to God and let God take care of everything, whatever is happening in our life. We just do our karma, what needs to be done by ourselves. So, is it so true, or there should be a... maybe you can share your thoughts on that.
It depends what you are drawn to. Are you drawn to Jnana Yoga or Bhakti Yoga?
Yeah, I have sense of both the things. I regularly go to temple, pray to God, pray for my family and well-being and those aspects. As far as Jnana Yoga is concerned, definitely it takes a lot of energy to develop, inculcate those kind of, the witness kind of...
Let me put it another way. With your Bhakti Yoga,
yeah,
are you at peace in daily living? Or are you just at peace when you're in the temple?
Yeah, definitely. When we would be in front of God, the more...
But Jnana Yoga is you're in front of God right now. Manifest as different individuals. So what is your relationship with the people in your life will reflect your bhakti. Because if you saw God in everyone, then that is bhakti yoga.
Yeah, so we right now, I don't see, to be honest, but definitely I understand that is what we need to, that is a truth. So someday or other that would happen because it is ultimate truth.
So both are the same. Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, Bhakti yoga is misunderstood that I just have to do bhajan kirtan and fall in love with my deity. That is a ritual, that is a practice. But if I'm so surrendered to my deity or to God or whatever, then that would only mean I'm surrendered to the entire creation because I see God everywhere. Then it means my bhakti is proper bhakti.
Yes.
If Sai Baba says, see me in all beings, and you are able to see him in all beings, that is bhakti. Yeah. But if you are living your life seeing individuals you have to deal with, most of them problematic individuals, then what is the value of the bhakti yoga? Any yoga, kriya yoga, bhakti yoga, kundalini yoga, karma yoga, that path has to bring one to the truth, as you said.
Yeah.
So, what is the truth? And where is my peace to be found? Otherwise, I may be involved in a particular yogic path, but the rest of my life and day is a mess. So, if you are drawn to that and this, so be it.
Okay.
Or you're drawn to that, this and karma yoga, like these people are, yeah. Beautiful. Because these are just words. Ultimately, you have to see where your peace lies. And whatever you're doing on the spiritual firmament, is it bringing you closer to that peace?
Understood.
Because imagine you're surrendered to God in your bhakti, but you're quite a nuisance to the people in your life. What is the point of living like that? What kind of bhakti is that?
Because our mind is restless, so definitely the bhakti yoga is, I would say, a first step to make it calm.
For you, someone else may not be drawn to bhakti.
Agreed. Everybody is at different levels, so I completely understand.
Everyone is where they are, based on their vasanas, sanskaras and what they feel, isn't it?
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. I want to really thank you from my heart for the, you know, your videos really helped me to understand the illusion, certain amount of illusion, in a sense that illusion of doership. To an extent that I understand that, yeah, I'm not a doer, I get it. People in my life also not a doer. Things are happening the way they're happening. And we need to be spontaneous. My question is around that when attempt to make be spontaneous happens. Like, for example, there are certain things which are needed for this body. It's a perishable one, but still, while I'm in a body, this body needs to be taken care of. So, for example, exercise karna chahiye. Yeah, I should not be eating certain kind of food or something. Now, earlier, before this Advaita concept, I could discipline myself. Ye nahi karna. This is not to be done. Now, to be spontaneous, mind is playing blame around it. To be spontaneous means do whatever comes first. So I'm stuck up with the spontaneous part. You know, I know like you cannot be, how to be spontaneous? How can you plan? Like, I'm stuck around spontaneously. Like non-doership part I'm possibly getting is spontaneity is somewhere I'm stuck up.
See, someone who finds it easy to live a disciplined life will live a disciplined life. Someone who finds it difficult will struggle with it, right? Yeah. Now, if your inherent nature was to live a disciplined life, you would not struggle with this. But if you've been pushing yourself, now you have an opening that I don't need to push myself. So the ego can come in through the back door. You see, this ego is a very wily thing. It uses the teaching to its benefit so that it continues to survive.
That's what I'm seeing in this.
Yeah. but that seeing is also very important, to see the antics of the ego. How it tries its best to get out of a situation. That, oh, I'm not responsible. It is spontaneously happening that I'm eating this food. Fair enough. But you are also liable to the consequences. So, for example, if you have a health issue and you know you should not be having sweets and you say, oh, according to Advaita, I'm not the doer, so I'll have the sweets, but then be prepared for the consequences. You see, so on the normally on the spiritual path, there is a sense of discipline. Like if you go to an ashram, it's a very disciplined way of living. Meals are served at a specific time. There's a whole routine in the ashram. So the reason is to bring the mind to that still point and not let it wander all over the place. So there's a niyam, there's a structure. This way, it can just keep going all over the place. That is what happens. But even this process of inquiry is good because it shows that you're actually digging deep into the teaching of Advaita. In my younger days, I used to sleep on my back straight like that. So then I concluded that either I must have been a monk or I must have been a knight who must have died in battle and laid to rest like that. But it is so interesting that so many of our habits, so many of our tendencies come from a distant past. We're just carrying them forward, you know. It's incredible. But when it comes to food, there's a very interesting equation there. Because my relationship with food reveals a lot of things about me. Like if I'm a compulsive eater, I'm adding more to myself without knowing it. You know, people when they're anxious, either they stop eating or they start eating compulsively. Both happens. Under stress, you can lose weight or you can put on weight. So what is my relationship with what is going into my mouth? Am I just compulsively satiating and satisfying myself because that is a pure form of suffering? So these are very interesting things to look at. All habits, what I watch, the kind of movies I watch, the kind of food I eat, the kind of discipline or indiscipline I have, because they reveal a lot to me. The kind of words which come out of my mouth will reveal where I am on my spiritual journey. If I'm putting people down, if they are words of condemnation, if I'm always finding a negative flaw in someone, it will reveal a lot to me. The sage is always looking at the positives. The ordinary ego is looking for that opportunity to condemn someone and bring them down. So we become more and more aware of our choice of words, what we speak. Otherwise, you're just going to vomit words out unconsciously all your life. What a way to live. So it's really, I feel this path is a fascinating path. It's so beautiful to explore it, to understand. That is why we have been given this body. It is a gift. Which other species on the planet has been given this gift of a vertical spine and this gift of awareness that I am aware? The animals are running as per divine blueprint. The tiger is chasing its food and things are happening in the forest of their own accord because there is no will separate from the will of God. But man, humankind is the only species who are aware, I am, I exist. To be aware of this is the spiritual journey. Otherwise, we are living like animals. what brings you here?
No, because I have not been coming because I had a class on Sunday which clashed with the timings, but I now that since my exams are over, I thought I'll come and I'll...
No, but do you like coming here or you consider it a punishment?
No, I like it.
Because I don't think I ever say what you want to hear. You must be wanting to hear ki he's going to say ki you give it to that guy.
He's the one who drives me.
Is it?